Well, how's it going to all of our auto enthusiast friends that are doing whatever they're doing right now all around the planet Earth? You've done it. That's right. You've tuned into another...
Kevin, another copacetic episode of V8 Radio.
Copacetic.
That's right, man.
Copacetic, a word meaning, yeah, everything's cool.
Everything is cool, pretty right much, on. Yeah.
And how that applies to this show, I'm not sure, but...
We're all a bunch of cool Fonzies, that's how.
Hey! Well, I'm Kevin Ostie, your host, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, here on the VA Radio Podcast. And I've never claimed to be as cool as Fonzie, but...
But we all aspire to be.
That's right. Got to have goals.
Right on. How are you doing to this fine and wonderful Sunday afternoon while we're recording this?
Doing all right. It's been a very hectic hectic Sunday. So good in many ways. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, you know, a lot of people. 4 out of 5 listeners tune in. 4 out of the 5 listeners. they tune in for our automotive trivia question, of course, which we start each episode with a trivia question purely amongst ourselves. But you're more than welcome to play along at home. You could even, if you want to feel official, you can get yourself a pen and a piece of paper and write down your answers.
Nice. That's what a great idea.
You just leave that there until the end of the show. And then at the very end, when we reveal the answers, you can look down at your paper and say, yep, I knew that, you knuckleheads.
Yes, everybody knew that.
That's right.
Except Q-Ball.
Well, we'll find out. I haven't had a stellar record myself recently, so... So have you, in fact, prepared a trivia question for this episode?
Absolutely, I sure did. All right, here we go. 4 out of 5 listeners, get ready. Pencils up. So, Kevin, I was seeing some videos and reading stuff about the new Z06 Corvette and its flat plane crank and its 8,600 RPM rev limit. So what is it about a flat plane crank versus a cross plane crank of identical engines that allows it to rev so high?
Well, that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. And I didn't obviously read the same thing you did. So I guess I'm just going to have to take a stab at it. I'm going to guess it falls into the valve timing of a cross-plane crank versus a traditional not flat-plane V configuration, if you will.
Okay.
I mean, they're both Vs, but
right.
What did you call it?
A flat-plane versus cross-plane.
Cross-plane. There yeah. you go. You could tell I'm going to win this because I don't even know what we're talking about. but if you look at the cross-plane design, you've got different things happening at slightly different times where, you know, one crank throw is coming up and another one is pulling a piston down, whereas those timing events, I think, are a little more spread out from a force standpoint on a cross-plane crank. So I'm just going to say there's a little bit less... you know, mechanical resistance going on. It is a balance thing as well. You know, but as I say, there's the timing events of a cross or a flat plane crank. It's still your same firing order and it's still, you know, a 360 degree rotation and all that. So I don't claim to be the world's expert on flat plane crank dynamics, mm-hmm. but, and it's funny, before you asked that, I wasn't even considering the fact that that design had an effect on higher RPM capability, because normally I think of that as being valve train related.
I see. Okay, like overhead cam versus push rod?
Sure.
Like the inertia and all that?
Well, yeah, you got all that extra stuff moving on a push rod, and you could have, you know, like in push rods, the right rockers and the right springs and the right cam design will, and flow characteristics will rev a lot higher than something that's restricted and heavier and, you know, less dynamic. So So what's the answer? It's in there somewhere. I don't know.
I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff on the wall, and I'm going to see what sticks.
That's right.
All right. I like that method.
I'm going to say the inherent design characteristics allow the flat plane crank to rev to a higher RPM, all things other being consistent.
The case is encased in prefabricated amulite, which mounts the panometric fans.
Right, to the two-stage reverse confabulator.
Yes, yes. All right, so boiling this down, it falls into the valve timing of the cross plane versus flat plane crank, and you also said it's a balance thing as well.
Yeah.
And all that.
No, I'm not so sure about
that. Okay. Well, that's a lot of answer for a short question, but that's good.
Well, four out of our five listeners have run their ink pen out of ink as they were writing this down.
I mean, my keyboard is about worn out after that, but that's okay.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right, there you go. Duly noted, and we'll find out at the end of the show, sir.
Whatever.
Just get out of my life.
Yeah, I got an easy one for you then, I guess.
All right, groovy.
When did Plymouth first offer a voice recorder in the car?
Voice recorder in the car. Wow, that's good. When did Plymouth first offer? Okay, so that's... just based on that, I think that is going to be a very, very old offering, very old option. And I think, this is a complete stab in the dark here.
Can't be as bad as the crank question.
Well, yeah, you'll be surprised after this. Let's see here. I'm going to say it offered a voice recorder. Let's see, technology started. There were some cool options that were coming out, like in the 50s and 60s on cars. Like with the advent of like power windows, some cars even had like a phonograph player in them. I'm going to say the first voice recorder was offered in
1949.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was offered in like a business coupe. That wasn't the question, but that's what I'm saying.
You're just throwing bonus in there.
Bonus, where there is no bonus. I'm taking bonus.
Just the kind of guy you are.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So 1949 in a Plymouth business coupe. It was listening to your voice.
To a degree.
All right. That's your final answer?
Yeah, man.
Okay. Duly noted.
Dig it.
We'll find out.
Can't wait.
Yeah, me neither.
And neither can but maybe three out of the five listeners, because they probably shut it off.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this. Goodbye.
Yeah. So... our last episode, I had this really, really nice introduction to early springtime with nice weather and everything, and it's not so much today.
Yeah, same here.
It snowed and iced this past week and was kind of a mess. So it's supposed to ramp back up this week, though, and be nice again. But I'm in the garage with the door closed today and not open and sunny like last time.
Yeah, it's sunny here, just pretty chilly.
Yeah, we got the sun, but it's been a pretty good weekend. One of our springtime activities that that Kelly and I like to do, and we've talked about this before, is go visit pawn shops.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and a couple of our local pawn shops are really good for picking up tools and things, and I always like it when you go there and find something you didn't expect to see. And so we went pawn shop shopping yesterday, And Kelly, of course, came home with another chainsaw because that's what happens.
That's what Kelly does.
I don't even know what the grand total of those are at this point.
Sweet.
I got to be pushing 10.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because you can't have too many.
Nope, you can't, apparently. And then one of the pawn shops had this kind of dizzying array of random stuff that was like pretty much new. And, you know, when you think of a pawn shop, you think of people are trading in, you know, jewelry and stuff. They're hawking and they're pawning, they're loaning, borrowing money against it. Uh-huh. But the stuff that we look for, like tools and, you know, shop equipment and whatnot, that tends to not be new. It tends to be used stuff.
Sure.
So what's the deal? Well, it turns out that these guys got hooked up with a recent, and if I understand this correctly, it was an Amazon truck that either got the truck engine failed or the truck got into a crash or something happened to which the entire truckload got scrapped. And it was like some scratch and dent stuff.
Really?
And what Amazon does, and again, this is my interpretation, is that they do an insurance claim on it and just reship everything out. So new stuff gets dispatched immediately upon. They go, well, this whole truck is screwed. So reship. And then they get the claim on it. But at the same time, they can turn around and sell everything off as salvage or scrap, basically.
Right.
So these guys ended up buying a truckload of things purchased
stuff.
On Amazon. Yeah. And I think it was like a Sprinter van load. It wasn't like a semi truck.
Right.
And so you got boxes of stuff that has never been opened that you could tell the box is crushed or it's torn or something, you know, crazy or whatever. And I'm sure they threw out a bunch of stuff. But they had told me that they've done this in the past, and it's a gamble because they obviously buy the load. But if they get lucky, a couple things can pay back the whole investment, you know?
Yeah. It reminds me of those... there's a show on Discovery, like storage hunters or something. They buy storage bins.
Right.
And whatever they see, whatever's in there is what they get. And they get like 10 minutes to look at it before they start bidding, and they get what they get.
Right. So I ended up not being in the market, but I came home with a refrigerator.
What?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, maybe you can see it, the red one.
Oh, yeah. That's a cool looking fridge.
See?
That's very 50s, man. I love it.
Yeah, it's like a retro style red fridge with chrome handles and all kinds of stuff. And it's like toolbox red. It matches everything in the garage.
It's like a Cadillac.
It's pretty cool, you know? Yeah. And I looked this thing up. It's got a dent in the door in the front, a crease, you know, not like it's...
Okay.
Wasted or anything, and it works fine, and it's brand new, you know.
Get out of town.
And the brand name, I don't recall what the heck the brand name is, because, and you've seen this on Amazon, all these companies that are popping up that just sell products, they don't even bother naming the company anymore. It's just like a collection of letters.
Sure. You
know, especially like in electronics.
Uh-huh.
It's not even somebody's name. It's just like BFTANZK, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, the BizFanZik. That's my favorite brand.
I love it.
Yeah, because it's all made overseas, and who knows? And I think this fridge is kind of along that deal. So I don't really know who made it, but at the time there was, I can't remember anyway, the brand was in chrome letters across the front of the fridge.
Oh, cool.
I think it was Galenz, G-A-L-E-N-Z or A-N-Z. I think that's what it was. A brand I never heard of before.
Sure.
But I jumped online, and I find that you can buy these new at Home Depot as well as Amazon. And the Amazon version, because that's where this came from, shipped to your door is like just shy of $600. You know, it's not $3,500 like some of the other custom fridges that are out there, but $600. And, you know, this one had a little crease in it. So my pawn shop guy says, hey, you interested in that? And I said, yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about it. You know, I have a decent garage fridge already, but this kind of matches my toolbox, my car and all that stuff. It's kind of neat. So he's like, okay, $250 bucks. It's yours. So there it was.
Okey-dokey.
There it is.
Sold to the man and with the bald head. All right.
Yeah, pretty cool. So another total pawn shop score.
Right on, dude.
Yeah.
That's a great score.
It really is. Again, not looking for anything. And the guys at the pawn shop kind of laughed because they're like, you know, you guys come in here and you end up buying crazy stuff that, you know, you weren't looking for. And I said, well, that's what you got to do. If I came in here looking for something, you wouldn't have it.
Right. <You know? laughs> Exactly. I'm coming here to find things I didn't realize I wanted. So.
Right. Things
like a fridge.
Too good of a deal to pass up.
Yeah, that's almost on par with the awesome bar sign, the OC's bar
sign right.
that you picked up when Paul and I were down there visiting you.
Yep, same shop, by the way.
Really? Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's kind of a welcoming of springtime when you can go out to pawn shops again. For some reason, we don't do it in the wintertime when it's super cold. It just seems like something we do in the spring. And even more so when it starts to get warmer out and we'll take the Galaxy convertible out. It's nice. Sunny Saturday morning, go get a nice breakfast, get some coffee, go take a ride, go to a couple pawn shops. The Galaxy is a little bit of a limiting factor because I couldn't fit this fridge in the car. So we had the truck, which opens up new possibilities.
The possibilities are endless.
Of what you can buy. Yeah. But overall, it was a good deal. So we ended up going to a couple different stores, and Kelly picked up that chainsaw, and also she got an electric trolling motor for her kayak.
Oh my gosh! Are you kidding me?
Nope.
That's great.
She'll be able to pull a skier with this thing.
I love it.
And the motivation there was last year over 4th of July, we went to visit some family in Wisconsin that live on a lake. And Kelly jumps in she loves to fish, jumps in the kayak, paddles out across the lake, is out there like all day, and then realizes, I got to paddle all the way back. So we came by in the pontoon boat, you know, the party boat, and threw her a rope and towed her back.
Okay.
But this time, you know, she'll be able to just zing across the lake with the motor. So,
and this motor will hook right up to that kayak.
We'll find out.
Oh boy! Alrighty.
A lot of kayaks have a platform or like a transom that you can attach a very small trolling motor to. I don't know that hers does, but the motor has kind of it's like a giant C clamp.
Okay, sure.
You know, design on the back where you can just you got these big knobs and thumb wheels and stuff that you can. So we'll get the kayak out and bring it to the shop and see if we can rig something up to make it
cool.
Make it work. Yeah.
Right on.
Hot rod.
Love it.
Hot rod the kayak.
Yeah. Hot rod the kayak. I love it. Oh, that's gonna be great. Get some lithium ion batteries in there, give it some put a high torque motor in there and it'll be cruising along.
Well, I think this thing was for like, you know, a regular, you know, 22-foot fishing boat or, you know, 17 or 18-foot fishing boat. And now it's going on a 50-pound kayak. So
scoot along nicely.
Yeah.
Great power-to-weight ratio is going to be perfect.
Rooster tail. Just going to have to put a name on the back of the boat.
Yeah, right.
Crack a wine bottle across the front.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a fun day.
That's killer, man. I didn't do anything.
Nothing?
No, man. That cool. Yeah. My daughter had she was babysitting this couple's kids. I picked her up the next morning. That's it. That's
there you go.
All the fun I had. Whoopity-doo.
All right. Congrats. Yeah.
That's why you people tune in for the hard-hitting facts.
Oh, man. Well, then there's that. This morning I found myself flipping through, I guess, the Instagrams, and I found a live stream from the Peterson Museum in California.
Really?
Yeah, so every, I guess, last Sunday of the month, which is what today would be, there's a meetup, a cruise in, if you will, you know, a show, and today was a Ferrari event. They had over 400 Ferraris.
Ooh, in the wow. lot.
Oh, it was killer.
That is killer.
Man. Yeah. And in Southern Cal, of course, you got, you know, they're all there. So
oh, right.
stuff from the 50s all the way up to brand new.
Mm.
And I think there was two F-40s. And there was a black Enzo, and there
Whoa.
Was Dinos, and there was all the 3 Series, and it was cool. And I don't know, it was the Peterson Museum's official Instagram account that was streaming this,
uh-huh.
and I don't know who the gentleman was who was walking around and shooting this thing. I'm imagining that those are saved, so you could probably go back and check it out. And it kind of made me think, we've done, you know, that kind of streaming. It's very popular. A lot of people do that, go to different shows and walk around.
Yeah.
And I kind of have a love-hate with it because it's a little challenging to stay on point and get decent footage of the cars, you know, real time. You're walking around. It's live.
Yeah.
And this guy, and I'm not, you know, criticizing him at all, he was attending this event, so... At one point, he had to stop, and he was monkeying with his coffee cup or something. And, you know, and we got to look at the ground for, you know, 35, 40 seconds. And then he got readjusted and moved on to the next car, you know.
Right.
And that's the thing you got to account for. You got to remember it's somebody's watching this. And if you want it to look nice, it takes some planning and some execution. The thing I always have the problem with is that the contrast of the camera, usually is your phone, it's hard to read in the sun.
True, it is.
So it takes everything you got just to be able to see the car and frame it up in the thing. But this guy was doing a great job of doing shout outs to all the people that were watching. So the comments are coming by, and he said, "Hey, where's everybody from?" And he's calling out, "Hey, you know, Brazil and Italy and New York City and here in Illinois."
Hey, Toledo.
I chimed in with our V8 Speed account, and he acknowledged, which was pretty cool.
That is cool.
And that's another thing that I have a hard time doing. I think you've seen us do the live stream from the drive-in cruise event.
Yes, I have.
Which is, I think that last one we had, you know, close, I think 400 cars, pretty close, same size as the Ferrari thing.
Yeah, great turnout.
And walking around and trying to say something about the car or talk to the owner and pay attention to the comments that are coming in. I mean, that's a challenge.
Yeah, that you're really juggling with that. It's a lot of things, a lot of balls up in the air.
Yeah. But I do think it's cool, and I think the live video thing, it kind of comes and goes. A couple of years ago, when Facebook Live really came out, and the YouTube live stream did, people were like live streaming everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's like a kid with a new toy.
It was,
yeah.
And pretty soon you'd watch, you know, a handful of these things, and it's some dude in a shopping mall, or it's, you know, a guy's backyard or something, and you're like, okay, I really don't need to watch these. And I think they kind of cooled off a little bit, but now I think, especially with the way of the world and, you know, events are coming back and people, mm-hmm. you know, really want to get out and do stuff, and some people are again, which is great. I think we're seeing them coming on strong. So today I put a little thought into what does it take to do those, to do them well?
Mm.
And I think I'm going to give it a whirl soon. I should have done it at the Grand National Roadster Show. If I had this thought a couple of weeks ago, that would have been a good one because it was an indoor show, so you didn't have the
sun wasn't a factor.
Yeah, but I have a little hood that kind of clips on the phone that blocks the sun. It's a little sun visor.
Oh, really?
Thing. Yeah, for shooting video. That I can use, and then I guess it's a glorified selfie stick kind of thing that, you know, you can hold the camera by and
mm-hmm.
not have the rhythmic walking up and down camera taking steps, you know,
uh-huh.
and kind of smooth that out, and I'm thinking about a way to improve the audio a little bit, and maybe whatever the next car show thing is that I end up with, we'll do some live streaming again and see if we can make that more of a thing.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that idea. Yeah, there's like plug-in microphones for your phone that mm-hmm. supposedly offer better audio than the internal mic does. That's an idea. And I know you could make the production value, you know, way better than what you typically see out there. I mean, that's your gig, man. So,
well, yeah, but I'll tell you what, that's in the past, that's been a limiting factor because it's like, I'm used to doing stuff with big cameras and having mm-hmm. broadcast standards in my mind all the time. And little stuff like when we were shooting, I learned this the hard way, but a million years ago shooting Hot Rod TV, when it was on Speed Channel, if there was a garbage can in the shot, the network would reject the show.
Really?
Yeah. Because you can't have garbage cans on broadcast national television. You know, what are you thinking, dummy? And it was tricky for us because we'd go to a racetrack and here's a, you know, you're in the pits, which is basically the parking lot, and there's a light pole and there's a garbage can at the bottom of the light pole. I mean, what are you going to do? So... I'm always trying to stay on top of those elements and good sound and decent video. Mm-hmm. And when you can't really get there with a handheld phone, I kind of just went, forget it. I'm not even going to bother, you know, trying to do this. Until like recently when, again, the phone microphones got better mm-hmm. and the cameras got, and the stabilizer got better in some of the Apple products. The thing that kind of sucks, you mentioned that external mic. Those are cool, except for there's one that's like a clip-on, like a lavalier, you know, so you could wear it and then shoot stuff and then talk. But if somebody else comes up and you want to talk to them...
They can't hear you as well.
Correct. Yeah. Now the mic's 4 feet away. And if you unplug it during the stream, the world ends.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right. So then it becomes, well, maybe a device that's got a couple of mics on it that has an input into the phone and, you know, and I got some rigs that can do that. It just, you know, I find myself landing at a car event going, oh, this would be great. I don't have any of my stuff.
Aha.
Yeah. Another thing is, and I got to check the latest version, but one of the recent iPhone software, you couldn't hit the camera switch to go from the front cam to the back cam while recording. Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah, that does suck. That's no good at all.
Right, because you used to be able to hold the camera up, do like a selfie thing, talk to it, say, "Yeah, here we are, whatever. Yeah. Let's check this car out." Hit the button that switches, and now you're looking at the car.
Yeah, now you got to flip the whole phone itself. Then you can't see the screen.
Right, because you dropped it on the floor.
Yeah, because you dropped it on the floor. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I know there's some toys out there. What we recently had a thing in our shop at V8 Speed and Resto with photographs. Photographs are a huge thing in our shop.
Yes, they are.
So, every car that we work on gets a multitude of photographs for a lot of reasons. When the car lands, ideally it's before the car even gets there. We ask the owner to take a lap around the car mm-hmm. and point out what they like, what they don't like, or, you know, if there's a ding or something, so that when it comes to us, you know, there's no question about if that was there or did it happen in our possession, God forbid. But then as soon as the car lands, we take a lap of documentation, photos, and then as we're working on it, we take pictures along the way. And some are used by the techs to... purely for reference.
Yep.
How did this come apart? How did it go back together? And we have, you know, all the shop manuals and assembly manuals and parts manuals. But if a car came in with a bunch of modifications or aftermarket stuff, there's no manual for it.
Uh-huh.
So you got to take those pictures. And they're also great for the owner. The owner follows along from wherever they are.
Yeah.
And then, of course, for somebody who's thinking about... having us do some work on the car, they can go through our photo page, and there's hundreds of galleries with thousands of pictures.
It's funny you mentioned that because I've done that. I've looked at your gallery for reference pictures for when I was putting my car together.
Oh, right.
Trying to wonder, I'm like, how does this go? Let me see if Kevin's got a good shot of that. And I pour through, and usually I find what I'm looking for.
Nice.
So, yeah, it works.
Well, glad to be of service.
Absolutely. Appreciate that.
Yeah. But it can get kind of ridiculous because we've got 24 people on staff. Not everybody's a technician, but the vast majority of them are. And they're working on, you know, a myriad of cars. We've got 42 in our possession right now. And again, some of those are in staging waiting for parts and whatnot. So right. There's probably 20 some that are active. So how do you do it? How do you photograph all that stuff? Right. So
you tell me, man.
I know. Well, and it's been years and we're still trying to land on the best way to do this. So what we've learned is that the technicians, either myself or we have a recent guy we've added. His name is Chad. He's a marketing media guy. We'll take a lap of the whole shop, and figuring out what the best time to do that was kind of critical. Because instinctively you say, oh, well, it's Tuesday morning. I'm going to go take a lap first thing. And then, you know, end of the day, let's go see what everybody did and take the pictures. The problem with that is the end of day photos and first thing tomorrow morning photos are the same.
The same photos. Duh. Oh, brother. Okay.
Because nobody worked on it overnight.
Right.
So now we're like, you know, right before lunch and then end of day. Because there's okay. like a 4-hour work period.
Yeah.
You know, for each of those. So when you're taking pictures, it's different from when you're taking pictures if you're actually working on the car. Because as you're taking something apart, you're like, oh, I got to make sure I know where the screw goes, as opposed to somebody who comes walking by saying, hey, I'm going to grab some update photos, you know, unless there's a communication there saying, you need to get a shot of this.
Right.
Little detail. So the way we got around solving that little conundrum is we provided the crew with tablets. They're strewn about the campus, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the technicians are free and encouraged to grab those tablets as they're taking something apart, grab pictures of it.
Oh, great.
All the tablets are signed into a common Google account.
Okay.
So they all automatically upload those pictures to a Google Cloud photo account, right?
Yeah.
So let's do the math. Now you've got a photographer walking around with a camera, so there's pictures there. Then you've got these tablets, which upload into a bucket of pictures online. So there's another source. So the tablets, unless you spend a lot of money on a nice iPad or a real high-end, you know, Microsoft Surface or something, most of these are made by these same Chinese companies that don't have any vowels in their name, like the people that made my fridge.
Right.
And the cameras kind of suck, you know? So You gotta be real still, and it's just not that great. And we don't want to invest a whole ton of money in the tablets just because they get dropped, and they're in a workshop environment. You know, not that we don't want that quality. It's just practicality has to come into play a little bit. So we opened up the opportunity for technicians to use their cell phones to grab some pictures.
Okay.
Because the cell phone camera today is far better than what these tablets are.
Sure.
The downside of that is. And it's a double-edged sword. I never really wanted to say, well, you need to use your own personal gear to take these pictures.
Right.
Because you're using your storage and whatever. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a tool, and the technicians use their own tools.
Their own tools. It's a good point. It's a great point.
To build the car. So then I didn't feel so bad about it. And then what we do is invite their personal email address, whatever the address is on the phone, we invite that from our Google space to be able to share the online Google photo space. So now periodically they can take pictures and then select them and hit send, and those get uploaded to our space.
To your space. Okay.
Right. And the space is different from the common shop account. It's under the same umbrella, but one gallery is the shop. The other one is all of the phone uploads.
Okay.
Because we can't just, they don't funnel together for whatever reason. So now we've got anywhere from however many cameras on individuals. And then we tell the tax, you can delete it right off your phone. I don't need to be taking up your storage space. You know,
right. Just once it syncs, you're good to delete. Yeah.
Yep. Nuke them and you're done. So you got that. Well, at the end of the day, when it comes time to cultivate these photographs, there's a few other challenges because you could be looking at 400 or 500 pictures from a day.
Yeah. Where right? do they belong?
Whose car? Yeah. Which one's which, right? Yeah. So we've developed some standards where ideally the very first picture of a sequence of photos, the first picture is the car. It's a wide shot of the car. Oh, the next 12 pictures are the red 69 Camaro.
Okay, so when you see another full picture of a car, you know the previous pictures have ended and new cars are beginning. Okay, very good.
Exactly. So that's the theory anyway. Sometimes it gets a little mixed up because the tablets and the phones have been known to upload at the same time.
Oh,
and
boy.
And then it's three of this car, four of that car, two of this one, seven of that one.
Hmm.
But I know people might be thinking, well, you don't know the difference between a 65 Corvette and a, 70 Trans Am. Well, we do, but when you're looking at a couple of screws or a bracket.
Right. From a few inches away. No, I absolutely don't.
it's not a car at that point.
Have a nice day, sir.
Yeah, it's tricky. So you take all those pictures and you got to remember to take the ones out of the photographer's camera, take the ones from the shop account, take the ones from all of the cameras that uploaded from the phones, and then put them in a big space, sort them into each car's folder, and then they go through a renaming process so that the photos are identified properly, they're also searchable, and then they lay out on the website in chronological order. And
good
then
heavens.
They are color corrected, they're resized, they're watermarked, and then they're uploaded.
Dude, that's a full-time job, man.
Well, it kind of is. And so I've been developing this process for, a decade and a half, basically. Mm-hmm. And of course I can do it in my sleep just because I've done it so many times.
Right.
And when our new guy Chad started, I was tasked with training him on this process.
Sure.
So I did it through a series of screen capture videos where we just did it. You know, we just go through and here's how you do it, whatever. And five videos over an hour long of
good heavens.
A process demonstration, and I feel bad for the guy. I'm like, oh man, I'm sorry. this is not the most fun thing to do, but it's crucial to what we do. So he's getting it. He's it made his head spin a little bit in the beginning, but he's certainly ramped up and is making it happen. So I guess the moral of the story is we're always seeking additional ways to streamline that process. But when you go through the photo galleries on the website, there's a lot going on there.
There's a lot of hours of work that have went into getting those photos, looking how they look and where they are in that order.
Right.
Good heavens. It never dawned on me how much work goes into that. I mean, I know you had a lot of cars in the shop. I know you have your employee base is growing, and I just didn't realize that many photos would be uploaded in one day.
Yes.
That's crazy. Good heavens, dude. No wonder.
Oh, yeah.
You needed Chad.
Oh, yeah. Definitely needed the help. And so in, August or something, we rebuilt our website. We launched a new version of it, new platform, new software. Mm-hmm. And I did kind of a soft rollout. It's fully functional at this point and doing pretty well. We've got a new online store. We've got some new swag. We've got the galleries. We've got some cool functionality in there. Of course, our V8 Radio podcasts are hosted there as well.
Darn right.
You can go check those out. But we have almost all the cars that we've worked on since we started back in 2005.
Holy cow.
From the very first car we worked on, the Royal Sport Camaro, the pictures, almost all the pictures are there. It's over 200,000 photographs.
Dear Lord. Your storage bill must be incredible.
Well, here's a pro tip. The Google Space, if the pictures are like 2 pixels smaller than a certain size, they don't count it as storage.
What?
Yeah. So we just set our cameras to be just shy of the, and it's a good size photograph. It's like a, you know, 4,000 pixel wide photo. And if you go over that, then they start counting your storage. But below that, they're like, nah, we don't care. It doesn't matter.
Wow. Okay. Listen, nobody rat them out to Google, please.
That's their thing. Yeah. It's not me. Heavens. It's not a workaround. It's the way it is.
Wow.
Now, of course, we have our own server space that, you know, we pay for every month.
Sure.
But that's Bernoulli's law, that things get smaller and faster every 6 months or whatever it was.
Right.
We basically have infinite storage, and we've never gotten a giant bill, at least not in this decade. A couple decades ago, yes, but not now.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Man. So what's the last car that would had some photos uploaded on it?
I think, you know, one that we've been... I mean, they all get uploaded together, so that's kind of a loaded question. But
sorry about that.
There's some cool stuff to look at for sure, and Chad has also evolved the process to get more pictures of the team doing cool stuff.
I've seen some of that stuff. I really like it.
Yeah, it's cool. And you know, I was always of the mindset that, you know, we got to get the car, all the stuff I just talked about. Those are the crucial, you know, photographs. And Chad's like, yeah, but you know, this dude's TIG welding this thing and it looks great. So here's a cool shot of Jordan TIG welding this killer exhaust system.
And, yeah.
And so those are trickling out into social, which is pretty neat.
Yeah. Showcase your people as well as your products.
For sure.
Yeah.
And always try to do that. And it was just a matter of kind of connecting those dots and saying, you got these pictures. Yeah. It's funny. I look at it and I go, that's really cool. Well, dummy, everybody else thinks it's cool too. So get it out there.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. So if you subscribe to any of our V8 Speed and Resto socials between Insta and Facebook and all that nonsense, you'll be seeing some neat stuff.
Dig it. Yeah. I love what I've been seeing.
So. Yeah. Did you guess the 3D print object that was the video the other day?
Oh, I saw that. I didn't put a guess in there, but I was thinking either cup holders or gauge pods. That's what I was thinking.
Those are half right.
They're half right.
Yeah. One of those
cup holder, one gauge pod?
I believe those were actually cup holders.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And it's kind of interesting because Jay, our interior guy, was making those. And when you look at a cup holder of a specific size to fit a specific, you know, custom console or something, if you make it out of steel, you got to measure, you got to cut, you got to weld a lip on it, you got to maybe do some finish work, you know, maybe it's going to be polished or chrome around the ring or whatever, right. Painted. You're in this thing for three, four hours, you know, when it's all said and done. And otherwise, you draw these couple cylinders in the CAD program and hit go and walk away, and you come back, you know, an hour and a half later and they're done.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it would still need to be painted because that particular part was done with a blue filament, I believe. So, but he had a really neat idea of, the challenge was for a Corvette, for a C3, which has no room, and the console doesn't have any room to put cup holders.
Right.
And he came up with this pretty cool little way to use, here's another secret we're going to let out, use the passenger side front seat mounts where the floor is.
Sure.
Where the seat mounts to the floor as a way to mount a bracket with cup holders in it.
Okay, cool.
Just kind of out of the way, not stuck to the console.
Right.
Sandwiched between the seat and the floor, basically, with a steel little arm that comes up and then pair of cup holders that would kind of be on the passenger side of the console.
Totally undoable if need be. Doesn't cut. No, there's no cutting. That's brilliant. It's perfect.
Yeah, and if you got a Corvette that, you know, the whole thing isn't custom to where you're not you know, including those in the integrating those into the dashboard mm-hmm. or something. You want to add them on. You know, there's all kinds of add-on cup holders that all suck. You know, hang from the AC vent or
that's not good.
they just kind of, they sit on the floor and you pray they don't go sliding and tip over and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, that is one thing I kind of miss. In my GTO, there is no cup holder, and I usually always have a cup of water with me everywhere mm-hmm. I go. I have my awesome V8 TV, my V8 Speed and Resto insulated cup that goes with me everywhere I go. And when I go out for a cruise, I want to have it with me, but then it gets a little dicey because I got to rest it on the seat and then make sure I don't forget about it when I make a turn. And if I do, it turns over and I lose water and it's a whole thing.
Well, and the last thing you want to do is, you know, wreck the car because you were chasing a cup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So, I've been thinking about that whole concept of you know, adding cup holders in a fashion. My RIV is the same way. My Buick, it doesn't have anything for cup holders. Of course not. Nothing did. But that car has a Strato bench, which is a bench seat that has the armrest that folds down in the middle, and the seat backs are buckets. So if you look at it, it looks like bucket seats until you see the base, and it's a bench.
Okay.
Which looks pretty cool, super comfortable, and I'm thinking about opening up that center armrest to have like a slide-out cup holder.
Ah.
So when the armrest is folded down, which it always is, you could just slide it out, it would click out, and put your cup in it. It's right in the right. You could grab it right there. It doesn't spill.
It's a good idea.
So it might be another 3D print project pretty soon.
That's cool. When I went to the Cruisin' Tigers show earlier this year, late summer, some GTOs had some kind of homemade cup holders that people put into them, and they were pretty cool. They were like a bracket that goes across the center console with a cup on each side. Straddling each of that in the bracket is kind of bolted into the side of the console. And some of it looked pretty clean. Some were pretty clean designs that I took some pictures of that I'd like to mimic. And some weren't, but the few of the ones that I did see, I liked.
Yeah. And I think the secret there is if you do something like that, especially like in your car, so you've got the wood grain top of the console, there's a chrome, you know, perimeter trim. Yeah. And then, I'm guessing, I think below the chrome trim going down to the floor is that textured plastic.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So if you can incorporate all that, you know, so you make something that's got that plastic texture around the sides and then the chrome extends and, you know, maybe match the wood grain. And all of a sudden it looks like it was something the Pontiac did back in 67.
Yeah, that would be ideal. All right, have your guys start working on that for me.
Man. All right.
All right.
Throw that in the hopper.
That's right. That's right. Put it on the 3D printer. Let's go.
That's it. Push go and walk away. It's that easy.
It's that simple.
Right. Well, it was funny recently at the Grand National Roadster Show, I was talking to Troy Trepanier, and, you know, their builds, I think they start at 5,000 hours. You know, it's just insane because they make everything.
Yeah.
And I said, you guys, you know, I haven't been to the website in a while, but again, my mind was on the photos and I'm like, the documentation's got to be insane. He's like, yeah, we really don't take that many pictures.
Oh my gosh.
You hire us to build the car, we build the car. If you want to see it, come fly in and see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Well, and there's wisdom there because he's like, what are we? Are we building cars or are we taking pictures of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you get to do both.
We do get to do both. We choose to do both, I think, is the thing. Mm-hmm. Again, because I would want to be able to see those if I'm having somebody across town or across the world building a car for me. You know, I'd want to be able to follow along. I think at Rad Rides, they enjoy that suspense a little bit. You know, somebody comes in and gets to see the progress. Mm-hmm. But a lot of their customers do make that trip to come in and see along the way. And we've got people we've never met in person, you know, that just because they're geographically somewhere else.
Right.
So it is interesting. So you got to kind of, we're trying to, you know, walk that line. Take enough, but not make it the whole.
It's cool, though. I mean, me as somebody who likes the site itself, I mean, I don't have a car there, and I don't have anything being built. But I love seeing the process from start to finish that these cars go through. It's really educational more than anything mm-hmm. else for me, just to see how things, how your processes are, how things go together, the order in which these things happen. It's pretty cool. It's interesting to me.
Well, that's cool. I appreciate that because it is really interesting. And, you know, again, today we don't have magazines per se. We've got a few, but not like it used to be. And this is where you go. You go online to find pictures. I think too often it's just a couple. It's not the whole story in one gallery. Mm-hmm. And you want to know more. You want to see before it. You want to see after it. And, you know, that's why we try to keep all those together and in a way that you can consume it easily and click left, and, you know.
Right.
Get through them.
And even those cars that end up being part of the video series are great to watch too, because you can, you know, you get to hear from the technicians and Trevor and you and how everything went together, what they went through, how things fit, mm-hmm. how they didn't fit, and things like that.
Well, then you can also stop and see the pictures of that car too.
Exactly.
See more of, you know, what we were talking about when we said this is what we had to do. And that's another, you know, interesting topic, because we talked last time about the 57 Thunderbird video series that aired. So we have a couple people that have contacted us saying they're interested in having us do something similar for them.
Cool.
It is cool. It's always that question. It's like, do we want to build a million of those, or is this something where hopefully we can showcase the talents and people can apply them to their own car, you know, maybe not a 57. And I know there's always a bit of both, but it made me realize that with the team that we have and the resources and the space, we could have a totally different team internally do another one of those. And it wouldn't be the same crew saying, oh, I already did one of these.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
You know, and it would be a different take on it.
It's a good point.
Which I think would be pretty neat. And obviously, in that particular case, Trevor was the lead guy. He kind of figured that car out. So we would tap into all that knowledge. But that's, you know, that's kind of theoretical. It's like, well, you need to put this here and use this fuel tank and whatever. But after that, creatively, you know, go to town.
Go to it.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Great experience.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, builds a fun car. So, interestingly, there's a show on Discovery, I believe, or maybe Motor Trend, however that all shakes out, called Sam's Garage. You familiar with Sam's Garage? You ever see that one?
Uh-uh, I haven't.
It's a guy named Sam in his garage.
Okay, right on.
His last name's escaping me. He's a very nice guy. But like 2 days before we released our final 57 Thunderbird Coyote chassis swap video, I get a text saying, hey, we're building one of these on our show, a 57 T-Bird Coyote chassis swap. Do you want to be on the show and help us out?
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I mean, it's great that you asked. I'm very flattered. I'd love to help. I don't know that we have the time to go out and suss this thing out for his show. I'm a little bit intrigued to see, because they started tearing the car apart, I think, in the beginning of February of this year. And they're talking about driving it at the end of March with a chassis and the whole thing. And I'm thinking...
Hold on there. February of 2022.
Yes.
And they're going to drive it March of 2022?
This is what I kind of get. They're like, yeah, next month it'll be running and driving. And I'm like,
no, it won't.
Yeah. And if it is, there's going to who knows? We'll see.
So, oh, wow.
So check it out if you want to follow that around.
All right. I'm going to follow that one. Holy, I want to see how that shakes out.
Yeah. We need to see. So.
Nice.
We'll find out.
We'll find out at the end of the show.
Exactly.
Oh, brother, man.
Well, before we get back to our trivia questions, there was another shout out, a comment on the V8 Radio Facebook page. And again, I don't have it in front of me, of course, because I didn't prepare. From the gentleman who said he never misses the show and he's spreading the word. Did you read that one?
No.
Yeah.
Man, let me see if we can't find that here.
So we appreciate the enthusiasm of repeat listeners because that was kind to hear.
That is kind to hear. On the V8 Radio Facebook page, you say.
Yeah. I think it was when we posted the episode the other day. It was either in the comments right after that, or maybe it was in my little generic preview saying, hey, new episode Friday.
Okay. Nah, I don't see it. Nah, shoot.
We'll bring it up next time.
Yeah, we will, for sure.
Yeah.
Dang it. Sorry about that. Sorry, nameless friend. We'll get to you next time.
That's right. As always, we appreciate the feedback. We'll try to be a little more on the ball.
Oh, brother. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, speaking of awesome, let's hear how bad I botched the theory of the flat plane crank versus RPM story in the C8.
All right. So, Kev, I asked you.
Z06.
I asked you why an engine equipped with a flat plane crank can rev typically higher than an identical engine equipped with a cross-plane crank, and you, boy, you went into it, but we boiled it down to, it kind of falls into valve timing of the cross-plane crank versus flat-plane, and you also mentioned that it's a balanced thing as well. Well, you were knocking right on the door of this, and we might end up giving it to you when you said it's a balanced thing, because the flat-plane is so better balanced than a cross plane, it doesn't require those heavier counterweights, thus making a lighter crankshaft, making it lighter, able to rev higher. So I knew that's what you're thinking.
That's what I said.
That's what you said. Rewind it. That's what he said.
I guess that is exactly what I was thinking.
I just chose
all the wrong words.
Yeah, it's a lighter assembly, and it allows higher revving.
Right on.
Nicely done, sir.
Well, thank you for that, I guess. cool. All right. Well, so my question for you was, when did Plymouth first offer a voice recorder in the car? And your answer was 1949. A very old offering, 1949, in a business coupe. You're very optimistic for the technology of the 40s.
Okay. Oh, brother.
The correct answer is 1971.
Really? 71?
Yeah, and they had an 8-track based dictaphone.
All right.
You could play your 8-tracks, or you could pick up the microphone and expound your thoughts. And in fact, I interviewed a while back a guy named Ken Funk who had a 71 Hemi Roadrunner. And his had the dictaphone, and this was at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals. And he's like, yeah, I'm not really sure what you do to that, except maybe maybe dictate your will as you're careening off a curve over a cliff after you wind this thing up to 150 miles an hour and lose control.
Nice.
You record your last words.
Oh, gee whiz. My ex-wife gets nothing.
Boom.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah, but that came to fruition in 71. So.
71. Wow, yeah. Gosh, I was way off.
Yeah, that's Yeesh. Right. It was a weird one.
Yeah, good, cool one though. Cool trivial knowledge.
And a pricey eBay item today, by the way.
Oh, I bet.
If you look those up, so. All right, my man.
Right.
Well, this is a good one. A nice little pause button for my hectic Sunday. Hopefully, I can get back to it. Part of the reason for the hecticness is that V8 TV and Muscle Car of the Week will soon be included in a new online streaming service.
Ooh, really? Do tell.
Yeah. We'll probably talk more about it in a later episode, but the deal's been signed. It's called High Octane, and it's going to be an app. You know, you go to Amazon or, I believe, Apple TV, and as you cruise through your channels, you pick High Octane, and then in the menu will be V8 and Muscle Car of the Week. And you can watch them on your big screen. And we're just getting the shows uploaded right now and getting all the thumbnails and all that behind the scenes work has to come together.
All right, so groovy.
So working on that today too, and it's cool. The group that is behind this this channel really wants to get this going, and they've got a handful of other programs already. As far as I know, so far we're the only muscle car and how to type, you know.
Oh yeah.
Content, which is wonderful. It's great that we can bring that to their table. There is a Brian Fuller show, Cars and Octane and Coffee. I'm really doing great with names in this episode. I'm sorry. too much in my brain. Anyway, that was a Discovery show that they ended up cherry picking to put on this channel. So high quality stuff. So we're fortunate to be included in that. But again, the team is rocking and rolling, and you know, I'm getting texts on Sunday saying, "Hey, we need this. We need this. We need it now." Boy. And so I'm trying to oblige. You know, broadcast knows no holidays. So
yeah, I bet
that's how it is.
Well, that's cool, man. Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll put a link up on the site and get more info about that later. But
dig it. All right, cool. Yeah.
And that was called Burying the Lead, by the way.
Burying the lead. All right.
The most interesting topic happens in the last minute of the show.
Well, you really know your stuff, man.
Yeah, so this time, play this one backwards. I'll make sure we put a note in the description.
Please start at the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. Too many cars and too much coffee, I think it boils down to.
Yeah, right. Well, we can make that the part of the episode article. We can include that in there.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll do that.
All right, dig it.
All right, my man. So, again, we appreciate everybody tuning in and sharing the positive feedback. It's been great. Hopefully, by our next show, you'll have a little better weather up where you're at. Maybe go take that goat for a spin.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. And I hope to have more updates from other adventures. And we'll talk about them in the beginning of the show.
Right on.
Yeah. So, for Mr. Q-Ball Clark, I'm Kevin Ostie saying, wherever you are in the world, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of V8 Radio. And always remember to keep your foot to the floor and your eyes on the stars.
And your voice recorder on.
That's right. For your last words. See you next time.